okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're gonna make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, real quick, Action Jacks. Now, Tom Alley's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures were up this morning, up after getting clobbered, and especially on the close on Friday. Wow. Up 26.75. NASDAQ Futures up 84. Dow Futures up 219. Looked like we were going to come back, yes, on Friday, Matty. But then I looked at the straddle in the SPY, and I'm thinking, boy, it's only like 80 cents. That we were actually up a little bit. I'm thinking, maybe, you know, maybe this is a buy. It looks like we might could move more than that. Of course I didn't. Imagine that, right? Why would you do the good one, right? So I think it's pummeled on a close, and we ended up being down like 20 some points or 30. It was kind of a lot. And so we had a bad week last week for the market, but it looks like we're starting this week decent. Now tomorrow is the CPI number, which again is being back to being a pretty reasonable number in terms of importance after being not much for like a really long time. Of course, we don't have money supply anymore. We don't do that. They told us we're not fit to know that. In one of the most ridiculous, arrogant things I've ever heard the government do, out of all ridiculous and arrogant things governments do, that was right up there. But so, what about Bears? Your buddy Aaron Rodgers with the big beard, letting everybody know he's not happy. Says it's only one game after they got their ass kicked. So the Bears, same thing.
Well. Starting with the Aaron Rodgers piece, that was surprising. And his attitude, I mean, it looks very dysfunctional to me. The coach says we should be embarrassed as a team the way we came out and played in all phases. And then Aaron Rodgers says, well, I wouldn't say we should be embarrassed. It's just one game. All the dysfunction in the offseason and him not wanting to be there, and Devontae Adams, their star receiver, wanting to get a contract extension and him not getting one, and so now it looks like he's going to be a lame duck. They may have one of those years where they go, you know, 7-10 and everyone is scratching their head saying, what the hell happened? They have way too much talent. Rodgers won the MVP last year. Like, where did this come from? And that wouldn't surprise me at all.
What do you make of the fact that he didn't like the one coach? That guy's gone. Now they get another guy, and he doesn't want to be there. I mean, what's the drill?
I don't know. I think my understanding was him and the current coach LaFleur had a pretty good relationship, but he just didn't like the executive team, the general manager and president and ownership and so on and so forth, because he felt like he was mistreated in his mind, even though he makes a ton of money and they've offered him the max extension type thing, but he just doesn't want to be there. So I don't know. Is there a little bit of prima donna there? Probably, but they've been very fortunate to have a top flight quarterback now for 30 straight years, essentially, with Favre and then right into Rodgers. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of that whole thing, but it's clear to me that this is his last year there, and they're either going to figure it out and have a good year and make one more run at it, or they're going to completely go down in flames, and then he'll be gone.
I think somehow there was a serious bitch when they just let Jordy Nelson go for like a bag of balls.
Oh, that was a big one, yeah.
And then
without any sort of consultation with him, and that's what he was mad about, is he felt like they were making big moves without even gathering his input. And that's something Michael Jordan used to get mad about, and a lot of star players feel like, not that they should be the decision maker, but that, you know, if you're building a team around them, why don't you ask them for their input? And I don't know if teams need to do that or not. I don't know, but that seems to be a common theme among star players. I think that rubbed Brady the wrong way in New England, and he couldn't wait to get out of there at the end.
Yeah. Well, there seems to be when somebody's a star, I mean, obviously Jerry Krause had this issue huge, that he wanted to prove that it was him and not Jordan. Okay, so.
Yep.
But the point is, it's both of you, grow up. But I guess at that level, you don't grow up. I mean, that's why you're at that level. But I think that in terms of some of the moves, the Packers, they let the one guy go, Then the next year, it was obvious they needed a receiver, and they drafted, you know, what, somebody else in the draft, right? So that was like round two of the not happy about it.
Yeah, they essentially, you know, kind of gutted their receiving core outside of Devontae Adams. And instead of drafting a top-flight receiver or tight end or some offensive lineman, something that could help the offense when they were very close to you know, going to the Super Bowl, they drafted another quarterback. And yeah, that really pissed him off.
Which would. I mean, this guy, less, the only time he's going to – he's never going to help me, because the only time he's going to play is if I get hurt.
Yep.
So it's like –
Yep. And I feel like we can win a Super Bowl, but we're a left tackle away or another receiver away or whatever it might be. And now you just drafted a backup quarterback to take my job.
Even though, because, I mean, I think they were maybe one or two good players away, and they have built pretty much from the draft. It's not like they drafted a quarterback and went out and bought the receiver. They're pretty light on the free agent market.
They are. They're lighter than most teams. I mean, their percentage of homegrown drafted guys is, I think, the highest in the league pretty much every year.
Which is seriously the Bears' Achilles heel in my mind. Is over the last 10 or 12 years, go back 15 years, it's not just the people they drafted, it's the amount of people they've drafted. It's got to be less than anybody else, because they don't care. They don't seem to want the draft picks, or don't seem to value them, or other people really do. I mean, I'll bet over the last 15 years the Packers have had, I bet they've had 25% more draft picks, because the Bears have given a lot of theirs away for Cutler and people like that. And the real higher percentage of their picks are either on their team or still in football than the Bears. I'm not even talking about whether they're really good or not. I'm just saying if they're still here. I don't think it's even close.
So not only do they draft more, they draft better.
Yeah, pretty much. And manage to hang on to them. But most of the Bears, there was a period 5-6 years when I went through it when we were debating somebody one day, and they were like, none of the people were on the Bears, and only like a third of them were still in football. The Packers had like 80% of the guys were still on their team, and the other 20, except for a few, were still someplace, be it a practice team or whatever. It's just strange that they that's sort of the way they operate. But what about college, Ohio State? Wow, there's tears in Columbus, eh?
Yeah, they. I watched some good chunks of that game, and I would say Oregon looked good, so it wasn't a bum team. But Ohio State was 14.5-point favorites. I mean, not only were they expected to win, they were expected to win relatively easily at home.
That was a little high for a team that's ranked number 10.
Yeah.
On the point part.
But, I mean, I watched Ohio State in their first game at Minnesota, and they did end up coming back and winning, but they were trailing at halftime. And when you're starting a true freshman quarterback, which you hardly ever see in college football, a true freshman quarterback just doesn't very, you know, where they're literally playing high school football, you know, several months before that, doesn't usually come in on a ready-made team that has NFL, you know, prospects basically across the board at every position and take over the starting job. And that's what they've done. And, he's very inaccurate right now. And I think you can see the talent. I mean, I think he's going to be a big time player when he figures it out, but 19 years old and he's overthrowing, you know, wide open NFL receivers, all over the place in both games. And you know, that leads to turnovers and frustration on the offensive side. And then on the defensive side, Oregon was really good, and Ohio State couldn't stop them. And Oregon was able to build a 2-score second-half lead, and then Ohio State kept coming back, but they couldn't get the big stop on defense, and that was it.
They're just trading at that point. Well, of course, to be fair, your people at your true freshman is not the person who shows up 2 weeks before Labor Day, like in my era. I mean, they're there all summer. So, I mean, they do.
That's true.
But you're right. I mean, they're still a true freshman. They're still 18.
You still hardly ever see true freshmen start on a big-time program at quarterback.
Well, the difference between 18-year-olds and 21-year-olds is pretty much night and day.
Yeah. They'll at least redshirt a year, or, you know, they'll sit behind a junior or a senior for 1 or 2 years and then take over.
Or else you're a total running quarterback, almost like another halfback. Yeah. Other than those guys. You see that once in a while. You know, freshmen that can do that. But even so, you're there in June. You're 3 months into it. You know, it's not like you're, like I said, I mean, in my era, I think the football team reported 10 days before Labor Day or something like that, or maybe 2 weeks. So, but how does, just in terms of scheduling, in terms of whether motivation and scheduling, how does Ohio State get Oregon and Alabama get Mercer?
That's who they scheduled. Alabama played Miami last week on a neutral
field. And they almost lost to...
And blew them out.
What did Miami barely beat, like, an... Was it Appalachian? Was somebody horrible?
Well, there's definitely a letdown after you're gearing your whole offseason up for Alabama, and then you find the day finally gets there, you get blown out, and then your next week you're playing, you know, Jerry's kids. There's definitely a letdown. I wasn't surprised at all that was a close game.
Was the second game of the year official chomp week? I mean, because I was just reading through the list, and I probably saw five or six, you know, 55 or 70 to zero games.
For some schools, yeah. You know, typically in college football, and this is clearly changing a little bit, but, you know, typically you would play one or two cupcakes at the beginning of the year because they don't get a preseason like the NFL. They don't play preseason games. They get right into it. So you would typically play a couple of cupcakes in the non-conference, and then you'd play maybe one, you know, really good non-conference game, and maybe that was your first game, your second game, or your third game. And then you would get in a conference season. Now, this is speaking of teams that are in conferences. Obviously, Notre Dame is different. But this now, that doesn't seem to be the case. They want a big marquee game first. And I don't know if that's just for TV to get everyone excited about college football. But everyone seems to play a marquee game first. And then they'll sneak in the cupcake week two or week three. And you're seeing that for a lot of teams.
Well, I mean, that's the difference between college and pro is absolutely dramatic. I mean, what do they say? The relief. So say the Irish play. almost lost to Toledo and probably should have lost. Make that.
So Notre Dame played their cupcake week two and they almost got beat.
Yeah. Well, and it turns out Florida State lost to somebody crummy. So Florida State wasn't all that good.
Yeah. So Notre Dame may not be that good. Or
they're terrible. They lost the battle in the trenches.
Or they just got to right the ship and figure it out while it's still early in the season, and they're at least still winning these games.
Well, that's true. But I guess what I'm saying is, even if you're a really good team, even in a conference, you know, you don't take anybody lightly. I get that. And as an individual, you know, you could be in Ohio State going up against, you know, a last place Minnesota team, and you could be a guard, and the guy across from you is an all-conference tackle. So it's a, you know, it's a max effort game for you that week, you know, because it's such a position by position game. But by and large, if you have two or three max effort, say four a year, it's a lot. Where in pros, it's pretty much every week, and there's 17 of them. I mean, there's a massive difference between the college schedule and a pro. In terms of, you know, effort, I think. I mean, if you're an All-American left tackle in college, I mean, how many games a year do you play against somebody, you know, I'll say worthy of the fight with you? Four, maybe?
Yeah.
Where in pros, it's pretty much every week.
Every week, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's a big difference. I mean, the Bears yesterday, I mean, and then you get down to the exhibition game and pros. The guys are to Collinsworth and the other guy we're talking about. You know, these guys never play. Quarterbacks never, because Collinsworth basically said every quarterback, he listed all the starting quarterbacks that didn't play a down in the exhibition. He said every one of them looked ridiculously rusty yesterday. Aaron Rodgers was one of them.
He looked horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to use. Yeah, and the Bears, you know, their guys played what, a quarter or maybe a quarter and a half in the second game, and the last quarter yesterday, as those guys ran down the field, the Bears looked like a high school basketball team that didn't run enough sprints, and they were absolutely gassed. They had no chance of stopping those guys. I mean, the Rams seemed in better shape. I mean, even though Montgomery pretty much ran through everybody for a while, right?
Well, Montgomery, 16 carries, 108 yards, which is a 6.8 yard average. He, of course, had the one big run early in the game, but he was good all game.
Yeah, he was good all game.
And he had a touchdown. So he was really good. Dalton was he was Dalton. He was 27 of 38, 206 yards, a 5.4 yard average. I mean, he'll just keep throwing the ball 5 yards down the field over and over again, which the defense gives you. They're giving you those throws. Meanwhile, Stafford's chucking the ball 60 yards down the field. Dalton had the bad pick in the end zone. He also lost a fumble. He finished with a 72 rating. They did get Fields in there for a couple of snaps. He was 2 for 2, 10 yards, and then he had the rushing touchdown. But not sure what they were doing there. But yeah, Stafford was spectacular, and the Rams just look like a much better team.
Well, the Rams,
I think they are.
Yeah, I think they are too. Well, they've got a bunch of guys on defense, and then I guess they got some more speed on offense. I was listening to, of course, the game's at what, 7:20, and already got the idiots on, not the idiots, but 3.5 hours, a long time to talk about nothing, on at 4 o'clock. So I was driving over to my brother's, and I'm listening in Hilgenberg, and this is what, I think a lot of, you know, whatever, but one of my themes, obviously, on the show, Matty, is these games are way more about teamwork and balance than people give them credit for. And Hilge goes, well, you know, we had Walter Payton, and we were a running team, and he goes, they had so many people up on the line. He goes, I'd get down to the center of the ball. He goes, it was literally dark in there with all the bodies. And he goes, all of a sudden, we draft Willie Gault, and I saw light. They were so worried about his speed, they were off me, and pretty soon we could run the ball a hell of a lot easier because they were worried about Willie Gault. And he goes, having speed on your team doesn't just affect your passing game. And if you don't get that, you're an idiot, basically. And a lot of people will say, why don't you just run the ball? Well, if you got nobody they're afraid of out there, you can't run against 8 people in the pros. I mean, you might 1 or 2 plays, but you know, even Lombardi couldn't. I mean, they had some passing game, right?
But the Rams were giving you the run last night. Because that's just how they play defense. Their strategy and the way they coach their defense is if you want to run the ball and get 3, 4, 5 yards a carry, and you have to get 7 or 8 first downs to score, and we'll give you that. And if you want to throw the ball 5, 6 yards a time, and you have to get 8 or 9 first downs to score, we'll give you that. We're just not going to give you anything over the top. And that's how they play. And so the Bears were able to run the ball, and they were able to complete the 4, 5, 6 yard pass all night long. And they got a lot of first downs, and they got the ball in Rams territory, I think, on every offensive possession. But then once the field got smaller, then the Rams tightened up, and that was it. Or the Bears would make a mistake, because it's really hard to string 7, 8, 9 first downs in a row and score a touchdown. Whereas the Rams are just chucking the ball 60 yards down the field and scoring in 10 seconds.
But you don't get – every other team isn't going to give you a guy 20 yards open like the Bears did.
That's true, but
– I'm going to say
– I don't even know if Dalton can throw the ball that far anymore. He certainly didn't try one time.
I'll bet you a dollar, Mortimer, that if the Rams continue to spot the other team like double the time of possession, that's a very flawed strategy. They end up losing with that.
I don't know. Collinsworth was talking about it all night. Like they're giving you the run up the middle if you want it. They're giving you the 5 yard pass.
Yeah, but you're not going to give that to a team with a good quarterback, because he's going to take that, and then finally, when you do move up, he's going to throw the ball. And by the way, now you've got the touchdown, and you've been on the bench for a half hour.
Well, you probably can't give that to a good quarterback, and you can lose games to good quarterbacks. That's why they're good quarterbacks. But there's only 5 good quarterbacks in the NFL. And the Rams.
There's a lot of guys that are good enough that if you give them a 6 yards of carry on the run and they only have to pass whenever you move up, that sounds like Bart Starr to me. I mean, you don't have to be Johnny Unitas. All you gotta do is be Bart Starr.
I just found it to be an interesting strategy, and they were talking about it last night, because no other team really does that. But the Rams are like, hey, we don't believe that any team can consistently score on 20 play drives. It's just too hard to do. And so we're going to give you that. And we're going to make it the Bears, I don't even think they threw a ball longer than 10 yards the entire game.
They
dominated the time of possession, but you knew they were never in the game.
I'm not debating the Bears and what they can or can't do. What I'm saying, just in general, you don't give somebody, because who's to say that you're not going to miss a tackle on a good halfback and he goes the whole way?
And that happened once. They had a 41-yard run early in the game.
Yeah. So we were talking a lot last week, Manny, about the Chicago and the violence and the police. By the way, another amazingly violent weekend. But I was talking to the guy who got his car Friday night, the guy who got his car stolen on Thursday. And he says to me, Chief, why didn't they show up and at least make an effort of taking a few fingerprints in my car? He goes, the chances of them finding a print from somebody who basically just got out of county and is probably out on parole were probably fairly high. You know where the guy lives. Just go and get the guys before, because he's obviously doing the same thing today. The guy's name is Monty. I go, Monty, you're obviously missing the whole boat. They don't care about any of that. They want no part of that, of getting that print, getting an arrest warrant, bothering a judge, going and getting the guy, bringing him back to county jail. Kim Fox has to find something to do with him. He just let him out on parole. Now here he is back. They want no part of any of that stuff. Why do you think this is going on? I mean, I hate like hell to criticize people to that extent, but they don't care. He goes, well, the cop who was there was very nice. I'm sure he was. His job is to pacify the people. You're the people. He acts like he cares, and he probably does. And he's gonna say, boy, I'd love to do something here, but the detective won't let me. And if you talk to the detective, he's gonna say, I'd love to get a forensics team out here, but they're too busy. I mean, whatever it is, whatever the BS is, you're gonna get. The fact is, they don't do anything on this stuff. You know, if somebody breaks into your car, steals stuff, rifles your glove compartment, of course there's fingerprints in there. And they probably are people that are a person or persons who are in the system. They're gonna give you the number of the accident and say, call your insurance company. They don't care. This has been our strategy for, or whatever you want to call it, for 30 years here. And now all of a sudden it's coming home to roost. And you have roving bands. At any given time, this car that was running around with this guy, going down North Avenue, at any given time now during the day, Manny, how many cars of roving, hooded up people, I'm going to say 90% of them are black in this town. Now in another town they'd be white, so it's not like it's a shot against black people in general. It's not, but here that the numbers are 85%. They're staring you right in the face. So how many people do you think are in a stolen car driving around on temporary plates will nobody ever pull over looking for some mayhem to happen? 100, 200 at any given moment?
I mean
you just can't have that, and we do, and nobody seems to think it's a problem. And yet I tell you what, I'm in the burbs every Saturday night, and Audrey will go out. If I'm not someplace, or I don't hear somebody at a table next to us or someplace going, you won't catch me in the city ever again, or you won't catch me at a Sox game or a Cub game. This is not going to die fast, man. It's just not going to. And you can't have that happen. And these people seem oblivious. I mean, what is different on Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle and the police chief and Kim Fox's approach this week than it was 6 weeks ago to stem some of this stuff? Nothing. Is there any difference whatsoever?
You'd like to hear something.
You'd like to hear something. And there is nothing. I mean, I'm not saying that I got all the answers, but I'll tell you what, they're not even trying. I mean, they say they are, but I mean, I don't know how you could say they are. I mean, my nephew lives in, there's a section in by Pullman. Actually, they just opened up, I guess, the building that didn't do anything when I was there. When we were doing cars, making cars, and there's like an old administrative, it's like the signature building of the place. It might have been where the front gate was. I mean, they didn't do anything in that building when I was there. I don't think they used it for manufacturing.
When you were at Pullman, were you ever on the south side often, or were you mostly downtown?
Oh, I was on the south side the whole time.
I thought you had a downtown building.
The downtown was their office building. They were in.
That's what I was asking. Yeah. Were you in the office building, or were
no,
you mostly
I was,
on
I was
the south
plant.
Side? Okay,
I was hired at the. They had a plant in Hammond. Okay, that's where they built the Amtrak cars. They bought one just for the Amtrak cars. Because they needed more of an assembly line system, because the plant at 111th Street, the original Pullman Works, which was a crane type of place, the single level cars, the plant was big enough where you could lift a single level car over another single level car. So that was your way of building cars. It didn't matter which one was first. You could pick it up and move it over the rest of them. But since the Amtrak cars were so tall, you couldn't do that. So they got this plant in Hammond that was essentially an assembly line plant, where you move the car down an assembly line, for lack of a better term, and you put the trucks on at the end. So it was a big, long plant with a bunch of different lines in it, where you move them from, you know, essentially front to back. So it was a different type of construction, because the cars were so tall, you couldn't lift one over the other. So I was, the administrator, the office was in Hammond, but then I was the financial analyst for the Massachusetts Bay contract, not the Amtrak contract. So we built single level push pull cars, commuter cars. They're like the metro cars here, only they were single level because they actually have tunnels over there, and they couldn't get a tall car through the tunnel. And so I was half the time in 111th Street and half the time in Hammond. And Maddie, it was spectacular. I was like Jim Boughton walking back and forth between the bullpen and the dugout. If I was in Hammond, they'd say they needed me 111th Street. They couldn't catch me in the car. There were no cell phones. Where is he? He's on his way to Hammond or on his way to 111th Street. Then when I got to 111th, had nothing better to do. I'd drive back to Hammond. Where is he? He's on his way. I was in motion the whole time. They actually gave me an office in a parking space at 111th Street, right near the door. My boss was so totally ticked off because I had a parking space and he didn't. Of course, you didn't need one. There was hardly anybody there,
right, in
the administrative part. But the fact that I had one just pissed him off. But no, I was like the only finance guy in the plant, 111th Street. That was great. I mean, it was an education for a 20-some-year-old guy. I mean, the people who were over there, they were spectacular. I was good friends with Les Murray, who played football. He was Cookie Gilchrist's backup in the AFL. And Al Blunt, Mel Blunt's older brother, was there. He's a buddy of mine. He was a hell of a player, too. We played the plant in a game, and he I don't think he was as good as Mel, but he was a hell of a lot better than anybody we had. Let's just say that. Same thing, 6'2", lean, 190 pounds, not an ounce of fat on him, fast as can be, same as his brother. Ran in the family. I'm sure he played someplace, but there were all kinds of guys. There were a couple guys who were former jockeys. I mean, you learn a lot about people when you're in a place like that. I mean, it was pretty neat. Anyway, S&P futures are up 24. Just looking at that. We'll come back with Mr. John Flanagan. I got our Hey Jackass up here. We'll talk about that a little bit.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, just Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures down 22. Up 22. Nasdaq Futures up 69. They were up 27 when we came in. So they're leaking a little bit. That's been the deal the last few days. We're leaking into the close, even though we've been up in the morning. It's Friday. We ended up down huge, even though we were not down huge. We were up at one point during the day. Dow Futures up 197. So we're trying to bounce back from that. Heavy over the market, I think, is a CPI number tomorrow. The PPI number was worse than expected, and if we get a couple of bad CPI numbers more. We've had a couple in a row here, but we'll see. You know, that might screw things up a little bit for the Fed. DAX up 170. It's a full 1%. FTSE up 58.8%. These guys have been pretty dormant now for a while. A lot of it has to do with the vacations and stuff, but they're back from vacation. CAC around up 48.7%. In Asia, we have the Nikkei up 65, that's 0.2%. Shanghai up 12.3. So pretty bullish around the world, except here at Hang Seng. They're down 392, that's 1.5%. Soho China dropped 35% on some failed deal. And some of the tech stocks over there are still getting bounced around because of governmental uncertainty. I'll put it that way. I guess the term is regulatory issues, but it's really governmental uncertainty. Dow Jones was down 271 on Friday, 0.8%. S&P was down 35, like I mentioned, 0.8. And we had NASDAQ down 132, which is 0.9. So pretty much down almost a percent across the board on Friday. 10-year rate, 1.32, down 1 basis point. Bund, unchanged at minus 0.34. Japan, unchanged at positive 0.04. We've got oil up 57 cents, back over 70, 70.29. That's 0.8%. Brent up 48 cents, 73.40. Natural gas up 8 cents, 5.01. That is very high. So the natural gas, if you've got an oil company that does a lot of natural gas, they're doing better now than the guys who have the oil, actually. But it's hard to find out who does what split. I say it's not impossible, but you need some pretty serious study to find out who exactly does what. RBOB up 1 cent, 216. We've got gold down $1 to 1790. Silver down 27 cents, 2363. Copper down 2 cents, 442. And we've got Bitcoin down $1,100 to 44,774. Maddie, I'm going to say last Monday, was that over 50,000 or was it pretty close? It wasn't that long ago. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a great start here on a Monday morning. No accidents in the area at this hour, so that's good news. Starting to see a little bit of traffic build up on the Kennedy, Eisenhower, and Stevenson. Those are our only three expressways that are starting to see some higher traffic volumes. Everything else is all quiet out there, and as I mentioned, absolutely no traffic accidents or stalls to speak of. So off to a good start here on a Monday morning. Weather today, clouds early, and then we'll see some sunshine later on, warming up to a high of 81 degrees. Right now it is overcast and hazy and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot today, a high of 109. Right now it's clear and 83. In sports, opening weekend in the NFL, I saw the Bears play Sunday Night Football last night in Los Angeles, opening up the new stadium to fans for the first time. And the Bears were routed in the second half. They trailed 13-7 at halftime and were in the game at 20-14 in the third quarter, and then gave up two late touchdowns as the Rams pulled away and blew out the Bears 34-14. As we mentioned a little bit last hour, Andy Dalton started and took pretty much all of the snaps, 27 of 38, 206 yards. Zero touchdowns, one interception, a 72.9 QB rating. Justin Fields got in there for a handful of snaps. He went 2 for 2 for 10 yards. He also had a rushing touchdown. He had an 87.5 rating in his limited action. David Montgomery was the star for the Bears offense. 16 carries, 108 yards, and a touchdown with a long of 41. But the Bears couldn't create any turnovers on defense. They couldn't stop the Rams late. And they couldn't create any big plays on offense whatsoever. And the Rams were a lot better, winning 34-14. Bears will play at home next week against Cincinnati. Cardinals had a nice start to their season, blowing out the Tennessee Titans 38-13. Monday Night Football is tonight between the Raiders and the Ravens. In baseball, White Sox took 2 of 3 from the Red Sox, winning 2-1 yesterday afternoon on a Leury García walk-off home run with two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning. So the Sox take care of business there. Cubs were swept at home by Chris Bryant and the Giants, losing 6-5. Diamondbacks topped the Mariners 5-4, so a quick Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings. Has the White Sox in first place, 82-61, 12 games up on Cleveland, as the White Sox look to wrap up the division here in the next week or so. Cubs, after a nice streak of ball the week prior, have now lost 3 in a row after falling to the Giants. They're 65-79, fourth place in the NL Central. Diamondbacks have won 2 in a row, but they're 47-96, dead last in the NL West. Chief.
Jan, how are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
I'm okay. Back in the day for the tribe, I guess we can't call them that anymore. What was the saying? Spine insane and pray for rain. So the Cubs now, it's Hendrick and Mills and pray for the end of the season or what?
Or run for the hills.
Yeah, run for the hills. Something like that. I mean, and the relief patch is worse. I mean, if you're management, and these guys are so friggin' arrogant, I mean, they probably don't see it. They announced 31,000 people yesterday, and you got your diehards in the upper deck that paid for tickets and actually will go, and the bleacher crowd looked all right. The first 20 rows of the expensive seats, was there 1 in 4 people there, maybe?
Yeah, pretty empty, and that's a weekend series against the Giants that you would think there would be a lot of tickets sold, you know.
Well, they were sold down
ago.
There.
Yeah.
They were sold. You have people not even going. I mean, nothing as a former season ticket holder, nothing frosts you more. I mean, if you're a generous soul, like I think I am, I never had a problem giving them away. I mean, I bought them with the intention of going to the games I wanted to and giving the rest away, business or otherwise. I mean, you can't even give them away. That's a new low, especially a weekend game in the summer. Or a nice weekend. I mean, it's before we go on to other subjects with Mr. Jan here, hey, what do you think the solution is, or is there going to be a solution? I know for me, who's loved baseball his entire life, and is still trying to work my way back into playing some softball one of these days. I don't get this time of game stuff. The White Sox were 11 hours to play 3 games. They were 2 4-hour games, and yesterday was 3 hours or 2:59 or something. It's unconscionable. But they can say what they want about first of all, they have too much time between innings, but that's commercials. We get that. The entire game, man, has changed to the point where even starting pitchers now, when they go into the stretch, can be 35, 40 seconds between pitch, where Jenkins and those guys used to be 12. You can't make up for that no matter what else you think you do. You got to get these guys to throw the damn ball. I mean, they get the ball, they walk around, the batter's outside, he comes in, by the time the catcher looks to the dugout, gets the sign, it's just a 35-second process between every pitch, except for a few starters when they got nobody on base and they're in a windup, they pretty much go pretty quick. Other than that, it's unconscionable. Every relief pitcher is over 30 seconds between pitches. You just can't have that. I mean, what if it was like that in a softball? We'd never get to the bar.
I agree. I don't know why to me it's so simple. You put a shot clock up there and, call it 20 seconds, 24 seconds, whatever you want to do. 15 seconds, I don't care what it is. Put it up there, and if you don't throw the pitch by then, it's a ball. And that's it. And it'll be corrected in one day.
Yeah, but you can't. I don't think you can't let the normal pace, what I consider to be normal, that the way these guys are taught and learned all through all part of baseball, you can't let that go to 35 seconds and all of a sudden tomorrow say, no, you're back to 20. I don't see how you do that.
I think you can. I mean, just stop screwing around. Every other sport has a play clock to keep the game moving. Every other sport. You have to keep the game moving, and they do it for a reason. They want pace of play. And baseball refuses to do it, and they could do it. Like you said, for 100 years, guys were getting the ball and throwing it within, 15 seconds, call it. And now it's 30 or 35, and relief pitchers is God knows how long.
Could be a minute.
Yeah, and put a shot clock in. And if you want to start it at 25 and then gradually go down to 20 or something over 3 years, then fine, if you're really worried about it. But I think it's all they can adjust their routine in a day or two. I mean, I thought it was crazy for umpires checking hats and belts between innings, and then all of a sudden you just kind of got used to it. It took about a week.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't take any time because they're doing a commercial.
I know, but I'm just saying. Like, these guys could throw the ball within 20 seconds instead of 30.
But they're being told not to.
I know they are.
Right. Why do you think that is? Is it to juice the TV ratings, or is it?
No, Maddie knows.
No, they've literally found through, you know, study that basically every 10 seconds that you wait within before throwing a pitch, you can add up to a mile per hour to your fastball because your arm generates that much more rest. And so you're able to throw it that much harder. So they're actually telling, especially relief pitchers, you know, before a big pitch, if you're throwing, you know, 95, 95, 95, before a big pitch, if you wait another 10 or 15 seconds, you can probably pump it up to 96. And so they're actually being coached to wait longer, which makes sense if you think about it, but it's to the detriment of the game.
The difference, Jan, I think is what Matty's, the next thing he would say, if I let him talk more, which I should, is that now they want these guys to have essentially a max effort pitch on every pitch. Or back in our day, I mean, Jenkins and Gibson's they'd be pedaling along at 93. When they really wanted to, they could bring one through at 96, but they're not going to throw a 96 against the opposing pitcher like the guys do now. Everything now is a max effort pitch. Well, pretty much everything, right, Manny? Except
for
curveball.
Not as much for the starters, but definitely for the relievers.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you're
and the whole mechanism of this, where they can actually measure the speed, and you see it instantaneously on the TV crawl, and you get the strike zone illustrated perfectly for you. I think this is a tremendous loss for spectators. Maybe it's great for the analysts who are trying to, you know, compare, you know, play after play, but the average watcher of a game, I think it's a killer.
I think seeing where people put the ball is, I used to just be able to watch the catcher's mitt whether the guy hit it or not, so it's sort of the same thing. But, I think how pitchers deal with the batter, let's put it this way, if you don't do that, somebody who doesn't know much about baseball really is bored silly. I mean, the only way you can hang in there in terms of being of interest wise is to really do understand how they're working the guy. There's one pitch here, one pitch there. I mean, what do you think, Matty? I mean, I think that's why I always like Steve Stone as an analyst, because he would make you anticipate the next pitch. He still does that, even though he's up there. But
so when you have good announcers, that, you know, that makes up a huge difference, because if you have trustworthy people who are close watchers, you agree with them when you can watch closely enough to see what they're talking about. But otherwise, you kind of let them do what they do as announcers and analyze and with that, you don't need fans that are having to do this on their own. I mean, especially for the old days of listening to games on the radio, which is the way I experienced it most for a long time. That was, you didn't need to have any kind of input or vantage point at all other than what you were being told. And it was still exciting as hell.
Well, I'm going to ask you, John, in a second, who the five, Maddie, too. I can't ask Maddie because he'll go and look it up and be right. The top five colleges came out, U.S. News and World. But one of the things that surprises me is, you start talking about old players versus new players and all this other stuff. When did people lose the part? Let's put it this way. I'm going to say that I've missed, the last couple of years, I might have missed a couple of days, but I was at home. But I never missed a day at Chicago Public Schools. I never missed a day at Notre Dame and going to school. And I don't think I ever missed. I missed 2 days in my 20-year career as a market maker when I had like 104 fever. Other than that, I was there every single day. That was my job. I mean, I might have taken a week off here and there and took some positions off. Like, I think I took my last vacation was 1987. But what exactly the, you know? I mean, if I got the job, I mean, if Matty and I were the, imagine the two of us in the booth, we'd be good. Matty, you'd have to call the game though, because I could.
That'd be all right.
You'd have to call the game. I'd be the schlump color man. The thought of us, why would we take a day off? We got the job. We love the job. We got 6 months off, for God's sake. These guys are never there. And even the obligatory female on the field, she's doing the Mississippi State game Saturday. T-Mac?
Yeah.
You can't just get one job and do it. I mean, the Cub on the field job is not a big enough job to do it every game.
It's a good question.
I guess not. Yeah.
I'm stunned. I mean, what's it? Pat Hughes was in the booth again this weekend. This guy between the lady was in there the last two weekends. I thought she was terrific. How many games out of 162? How many has the guy done? 120, and he's not even that good.
I think that you're right, and I'm amazed that even Deshaies hasn't been doing a ton of games.
He must have had some COVID thing or something, because he was off like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah,
straight in a row, because he's usually always there.
That's possible, but you would think there'd be a news release on that or something. But
yeah, well, the dude in the radio booth, he's always there. The color guy, he's real
Ron
good.
Coomer,
I think.
Yeah,
I like him a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I think he's solid.
And but he's always there. He's always upbeat, and he matches up with Pat Hughes real well. You could tell that. Hughes has a little more difficulty with Deshaies. He doesn't work in him because Deshaies isn't as used to. I mean, Hughes is a radio guy. He's like us, right? When he stops talking, he expects Deshaies to say something, and Deshaies doesn't all the time. So he repeatedly asks him a question where he wants him to say something. Like the minute he stops, and Deshaies is not used to that.
It's, yeah.
You and I notice the difference. Probably the listeners probably don't. I don't. But you and I do, because in radio, you can't just, both guys have nothing to say for 30 seconds. You can't do that.
Right. TV, you can let it breathe. And
is that the term?
Let it breathe, yep.
Okay. And well, that's cool. But who did the Sox over the weekend? They had DJ was off for the weekend.
Oh, on radio?
Yeah. But
I haven't listened to the Sox radio broadcast yet, but I assume it's pretty good.
Well, Lynn Casper's good.
Yeah.
But I bet he's done 30 games on TV.
Well, it's not just a Cubs thing. Steve Stone's off every other week, and
a lot of guys didn't travel.
And then Benetti had COVID issues, and he had other issues. No one travels. What are you talking about? They're all doing the games from home.
No, they're
only Taylor McGregor, the sideline reporter or whatever you call her. She's the only one that travels. Benetti and Stone haven't been to a single road game.
Yeah, they have.
Except for the Cubs.
No, they. I think they have.
I don't think they have. They didn't even go to Milwaukee.
I think they traveled to. Yeah, they did because Stone didn't make the trip. Benetti went someplace. He did the West Coast trip, but then somebody covered him while he made his way back. Something was because I know the even Thayer and what's his name.
In baseball, I don't think any of these guys have been doing road games, except for a handful here and there.
They got to get there on their own. They can't fly in a team plane.
Yeah, and either way, Stone's missed weeks of the season, as has Schiambi, as has Deshaies, as has Benetti, and it's strange because I feel like for my whole life, they just did every game.
Well, Benetti had COVID a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I get that. That's obviously
different. But I know, the guys, Pat Hughes and those guys, they drove to Milwaukee, and then they drove to they drove to St. Louis because they were talking about driving together. And I think now Thayer and Joniak were on commercial out to L.A. The Bears wouldn't let them fly with them. It's pretty screwed up. So you're not getting on the team plane at all. So it's very difficult for you to do that. You got to go on your own. So I think they drove to Cincinnati too. And then the day after, by the time they got back here, they missed a day game here or something. I don't know. I think they've done some, Maddie, but it's been on their own.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's amazing to me how you can have 50,000 people in the park and you can't let your announcers on the plane with you when everybody else can fly all over the country and it's fine, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of bizarre. So Jan, another wild weekend, eh? And it's so let's see. I'm gonna. I mean, where am I here? I'm going through our. So now we at Friday. All right, now I'm going to say not Friday, but a week ago Thursday. I drove right by and down Ashland Avenue at 18th Street and got some lunch for the gang here because I was out on. Actually, went to see a client. Just happened to be coming back that way. Here we are, 2:45 p.m. Somebody shot and killed in 1900 South Ashland. So does that mean I should never drive around Pilsen anymore, ever, during the day? 1 p.m., 5500, but my nephew and his lovely bride and sweet little daughter, got she a piece of work, She only likes pasta. So I saw pasta on sale, so I brought my brother like 12 pounds of pasta this weekend. Because I got it for on sale. Because that's all she wants now. She just, whatever you cook, you got to cook her some spaghetti. She loves it. I'm sure that too she'll pass, but right now that's what she's in. So they actually live in, there's a kind of an artist community in Pullman. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it's a very eclectic, multiracial, and they live in there. And, so you think I'm worried? I love these people. 300, 940 p.m. on Saturday night, six people shot, 300 East Kensington, West Pullman. One person dead, female 42. Let's see, we got another one downtown, 100 West Wells. Well, there's no such thing. Wells is north and south, so that must be 100. Is it South Wells? If it's South Wells, where are we? 411 South Wells?
Yeah, you're pretty close.
So that it can't be West Wells. It's got to be north or south. Male 24, Sunday 2:30 in the morning. It's it never ends, man. And there's never any new. Something my nephew yesterday was we're talking about it, and he's a pretty good kid. He works as a guy who does handles machinery, does the controls and stuff, and he was saying that we need to change this entire. I mean, as much as I contribute to the policeman's vest fund and all that other stuff, we got to change this whole thing. Well, not just at the top, but they need to. I mean, the idea that you can't hire somebody from the outside, that if a sergeant from the LA force that's had nothing but commendations, you can't hire him as a sergeant here. You know, that's so crap. I can't even go there, John. I mean, you need some new blood. And, I don't know how you have to shake that. That's more of a Luke question, but I don't know how you got the idea that every single person has to start at the bottom and work their way up. That's insanity, I think. I mean, you need some new blood. You need some new ways of doing stuff. You can't just be indoctrinated in the old way that obviously is not working. Or more am I wrong here? I mean,
There's a lot of stuff not working, but
you
were talking about your friend Monty with the car episode, and I compare that to when I had an attempted theft of my car back in 1990, and accidentally discovered while I was getting dressed in the morning that somebody was sitting in the front seat of my car with the dome light on and pulling everything out of the glove compartment. I got close enough to see who he was. It wasn't anybody I ever saw before. I called the police, and within a minute, they had the alley blocked. They had this guy dragged out of there. I went to the preliminary hearing later that day, gave testimony. The state's attorneys were just licking their chops because they had this guy cold on this. And he had a rap sheet a yard long, and he got put away because of that. And this is just an attempted car theft. The car never moved an inch. And here's your buddy. You can't get anybody to lift the finger to do anything when the car's been, driven around by some idiot. So it really shows us how there's no priority to any of this stuff anymore. Property crimes are way down the list, and the violence is also completely down the list too.
They
can't keep up with any of it.
When I first moved to Armitage and Seminary, it was pretty interesting, Jen. Once in a while, the streetlights would go out for a few nights. And whoever the they's were, they must have known where the streetlights were out. Now, whether these were plants out, whenever that happened, the next three nights you'd get three or four cars broken into on the street. I actually had a tailgate in my pickup truck stolen. And you call the police on that, they just give you, here's the accident number, call your insurance company. They don't even come out. So, I mean, it depends on what district you're in, who the sergeant is, I guess, and the lieutenant, whether they actually want to do something or not. But, your situation, you might have just caught somebody close. They put out the call and somebody said, because the guy was still there. That might have been the story.
Yeah, it was an easy catch. Really, and I had a good eyewitness because I had watched this guy through a fence. I was 6 feet away from him, so I could clearly identify him later on at the preliminary hearing. So it was a kind of an open and shut case, but it just shows that there was. I mean, I've had experiences here where there have been break-ins in the neighborhood, and the cops are called, and 45 minutes later, somebody shows up. Well, I don't know if a break-in isn't urgent. I guess where do you put a shooting then?
Well, it's not urgent if the people are gone. I think that's the story. But whether or not, it's like on TV where they actually go out there. I mean, these all got to be done by. I mean, if you see, you know, 10 car break-ins, and you took the fingerprints, and you had somebody to do that, even if they just did, you know, kind of a half-assed job, I'm guessing you're going to find with after 30 of these things, there's going to be 5 sets of prints that keep coming up. So at least if you ever do find somebody, it's not one time, it's not petty theft. You can say, okay, here's right. 10 times. By the way, you're going away for a while. But there's zero effort to do any of that. And the way it's always somebody else's fault. Oh man, I'd love to help you, but it's this detective. Okay. But how many other, that's the same as the corporate world, right? Oh yeah, I'd really like to help you out, but guess what? My boss said no. Okay, well, who's your boss? Well, I can't tell you that. That kind of crap. I mean, it goes on all the time, right? I mean, it's just, but how much, Jen, how much of what you see, I mean, I was talking last week about if you wanted to turn the economy on, you know, with the COVID and everything, how exactly would you get it started? And I think I've run this by you and Maddie. I think I've figured out how step one would be for me as the president or the governor or the mayor or all three in agreement, which of course you'll never get. I'd get every public employee back to work. Federal Reserve, back in your building. City Hall, back in your building. County building, get back here. Schools, get back here. I think that would be the absolute number one thing you would have to start this bus. Because that's the only thing you can really control. You can't tell PTI to bring all 5 people in instead of 4 or 3. I mean, everybody is here, but that's not the point. I mean, you should back off on telling other people what to do, but the people that you directly control, I mean, how many people do you think are working from home in Washington? Department of Education, I heard a rumor, don't know if it's true or not, they're talking January. Meanwhile, the schools are going back. I mean, maybe they brought those guys back early, and I'm speaking out of turn, but I'll bet in Washington, a lot of people aren't there. Get their ass back. Right?
I bet if you did a study and just looking at the bureaucracy in the Chicago Public Schools or any school district or any public employees union or whatever staff they have, I would bet you would find hardly any of those people have been coming into the office on a regular basis. Still aren't.
And I'll tell you how hard they're working from home, which is such a load of crap.
I know. But if you can't, once you make it more, you people really do develop habits about this, and they're gonna find every excuse in the book. The teachers have certainly been masters at this, making it as unlikely as possible that they'll ever return to a normal school day. And in the meantime, there's gonna be every other mandate that they're gonna push on people, and you're gonna have public, figures like Pritzker and everybody else going along with them. So you got the people least willing to come in and resume their normal lives, dictating policy pretty much across the board. There's a real spillover effect to this. But you're right, until you get the public employees back, nothing's going to follow suit. It's not going to happen in the opposite direction.
I got a quick one, but it shouldn't be, well, I won't use any names, but my nephew, of course, has the same last name as me. Somehow managed to marry one of the nicest, brightest young ladies you ever wanted to see. I mean, she's absolutely a treat to be around. And she's a public school teacher that teaches math from first grade up to calculus. I mean, she's really good. And, did a lot of work online and all that kind of stuff. And I said, she's the one who's been feeding me that everybody's a year behind. I mean, it depends on if you're an honor student and you're in a family where you had the ability to have a computer in a separate room and the parents actually gave a crap. You're a third behind, which isn't so bad. But if you're not, she goes, I mean, the people that were, like sophomores, or freshmen, you're gonna end up not learning geometry because they think that algebra is more important for standardized tests than geometry because there's not much on there, even though I think geometry means a lot in terms of your thinking process and stuff, but that's just me. Anyway, you're gonna end up losing the geometry piece because the dictum from on high is so. Anyway, she says she gave a quick test to her essentially honors calc, pre-calc, or whatever it was, and she goes, I just made them pull out pencil and paper and put their stuff down. You know, no phones, no nothing. And she goes, it was a huge wake-up call. She goes, at home, they just cheat. I go, how the hell do you cheat on a calc test at home? She goes, oh, what's the matter with you? She goes, all you do is you put the problem into Google or something, or in some, I don't know, some math rooms. And she goes, every problem has been asked before, pretty much. She goes, the solution comes right up. I had no idea.
Crossword puzzle clues. You can get an answer real easily online.
I mean, Manny, do you have any idea that you could put your algebra or calc problem online and somebody, it was already solved for you somewhere? I would never even have guessed that.
I would assume you could, yeah.
Well, that's because you know about this.
Everything
stuff
in the world can be found online if you look hard enough.
Well, it must be easy to find, or else it would be easier just to do it yourself. I mean, if it was real hard to find.
Not if you don't know how to do it.
Well, that thought would never cross my mind. That just shows you how far out of touch I am with some of this stuff.
Well, it shows that one of the real risks, you know, and the things that have been oversold about online education, distance learning, whatever, the whole testing problem of, you know, doing a test in a supervised setting has some real thinking behind it. If you really want to make sure there's results that are dependable and aren't gotten by, you know, ill means or whatever else. But you have online testing, and you get somebody who's, you know, got two computers up or can just get out of one window and go into another one. And whether the tests are timed or not doesn't really matter. I mean, you can still do an end run around all this stuff. So what kind of testing mechanism is it when you can sort of drop out of sight for a second and cheat and go online and get the answer and fill it in, and the person at the other end is grading this thing, and it's not even being graded by a person anyway. What kind of education are we really pushing here?
Well, she said it was a serious wake up call for all concerned, because I guess these are the honors kids. They couldn't do anything, evidently. How scary is that? Just saying. But John, we have the CPI number this week. I was out, we had some workers over at Audrey's place, my guys. And so we ducked out late, just went to the Mexican place and had an appetizer, split a dinner. At a medium family, not a medium, a mediumly priced, maybe not even medium price, maybe low to medium price, family Mexican place. It happens to have a real nice bar. You can sit there and watch a game because it's in the same complex as two sports bars. So nobody even knows about this place. You can sit down and there's like four big TVs. You tell them what you want on. It's spectacular if you want to watch something. Fajitas, guess how much, Manny?
What kind of fajitas?
Well, the combo, steak, chicken, shrimp.
Steak, chicken, shrimp,
15?
I was going to say $17.99.
$27.50.
Oh, this is the low medium.
I'm going to say
that sounds like
a year ago.
Lied me.
A year ago was $15.
Yeah, I would say they're no longer in the low medium.
Wherever you go now, just about wherever you go. I mean, and I try and do this because I think all these guys to think that they're all idiots. When I say idiots, they can't calculate. They surely can. Trust me. I mean, not anybody wants to do this and they're not having a good time. Check what you're eating. It's up to five times everywhere what the place is paying for the dish. Just to cover the overhead. And that when I left Pullman, it was probably 2.5 times because one of the guys, my buddies left for, he still played softball, so I still talk to him. He went to Scott Ladd Ready Froze and he learned all about the restaurant business because they were purveyors to restaurants for meat and stuff. And he said that in those days, that if the steak cost the place $8, it should be 20 to you. So it should be 2.5 times above what they paid for it. I'm going to say that number. First it went to 3. Ask your bro, Matty, next time you see him, if I'm right. I think we're up to 5. Just about every place you go, I love to go shopping and do stuff because I cook for people here at work and stuff because there's nobody down here. You can't get breakfast down here yet, anywhere. There isn't a place, even Ceres, it just opened. You just go to breakfast all the time. They're not open for breakfast. So I don't know where I'd go if I actually wanted to take somebody out for breakfast there. Maddie, do you? Is there a place? I suppose I could run. I'd have to walk down to Lou Mitchell's, wouldn't I?
Yeah, I was going to say Lou Mitchell's is still open, I think.
I'm going to say if you get a pasta dish with, 4 ounces of chicken in there or something, which is going to cost them, $3, it's going to be 15. It's going to be exactly, we're like 5-1 every place. Same way with wine, same way with drinks. I don't see how when you have a Mexican place that you are trying to get a family of six in there, that bill can't be $175. It just can't be. And have people go out. I mean, they're not fighting COVID anymore. They're fighting price, I think, in some of these areas.
Well, I've given up really on dining out, Tom, for the most part, for that reason. I just can't afford it.
Well, I mean, you can find a place like the Tripoli, which will wing you a really good burger. They're up to $11.50. I'm going to say 2 years ago it was $7.50. We were talking, every place in the last 2 years is up 40-50%, isn't it, May? It's got to be. On just about everything.
Yeah.
But that's assuming they're giving you the same thing and haven't cut down the quantity.
But which is also a problem I found, too. The places I know well enough to kind of compare, the portions are smaller, there's less meat in the dish. But the price is like way off the map, so.
Well, the series, which pours the huge drink, that's where I noticed in the last week, price of a decent bourbon went from $11 to $13. Well, hell, it's 20% in a week. I mean, I think these numbers are over the chart, and one of the reasons why you're not seeing people go these places is, matter of fact, get a load of this. This is me now. I mean, I cook a lot of times for people down here at PTI. So, I checked the bacon out at the Myers. The best I could find was $7.99 for the night, the real good thick cut stuff for 12 ounces. I go, I'm not doing that. So I go over to Menards and buying some stain for Audrey's garage door. And, how Menards does this, I have no idea. I mean, they basically have a freezer with pizza in it, like next to the appliances. I mean, it's kind of the oddest store there is. So I see this freezer, Maddie, of frozen bacon, a terrific brand where you can pick thick cut, apple wood if you want, cherry wood, whatever, any kind of different flavors. It's $6.99 for 24 ounces. So I got 8 of them in the basket, right? So I got like 15 pounds of bacon that I can just keep frozen. I mean, you got to go with it when you can now. Otherwise, I mean, it's relentless. I mean, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we don't get like a 1% number this month or next month. And when that starts to happen, Jen, they're going to put pressure on this Fed. And this whole concept of some people with so much money here and other people without, and they're driving up these asset prices. The idea that a used car costs 40-50% more of the same car as it did 2 years ago. I've had 5 people in the last week tell me, I bought a car 2 years ago, I wish I didn't have to drive because I could sell it now for 40% more than what I bought it for. This is a used car. It goes down in value every day you drive the damn thing, right? And they're going up. What's it going to take, Jan, for the population to realize that the price of your house is not going up, the value of the dollar in your pocket is going down? How are you ever going to get more than a few people I can talk into it on the show to realize that that's what's happening? That the stock market's up 25% as the amount of money in the system is up 25%. It's like an exact match. Duh.
Well, it's a brutal lesson in inflation, I'll tell you. I mean,
But it sort of isn't yet, because we keep saying it isn't. Yet, why are we so quiet about this? Why aren't the people that just elected, Joe Jamoke or Jane Jamoke as their representative, calling up and saying, "Hey, what are you doing? I compared 2 grocery lists, and from 2 years ago to now, and it's up 30%. What's the matter with you people? Why aren't we getting this feedback? Are we just the airwaves dominated by the big guys, or what's happening? Maybe it's more of a Maddie question. Why is this very simple news not getting out, Maddie?
You're saying it's not getting out that prices are going up? I think it is.
They're not a national.
It's all everyone talks about.
But I'm saying not to the point where what is the government doing? Why are they going up and why? I mean, there's not a national groundswell. There's not 15 Milton Friedmans from every university in the world, you know, just going out and writing columns saying these guys are idiots. Or, well, they're not idiots. They're doing this for a reason, and look who it's benefiting. And look,
our buddy Bill Cohan wrote a big opinion piece on it in the New York Times a month ago, and we had him on, or 2 months ago, whenever that was, talking about the Fed causing inflation, and it's all coming to a head, and it's just a matter of when, not if.
Okay, so
that's one. Maybe there needs to be a lot more, but this weekend I was at a wedding and with a lot of extended family and friends that I haven't seen in a long time, and all everyone talked about the entire time was car prices are through the roof, used car prices are through the roof.
Were you out there cutting the rug?
No. It was kind of one of those outdoor things, and it was hotter than hell.
Oh.
And so there was no dancing, but it was
fun.
Were
you relieved about that?
No, I don't mind dancing as long as there's alcohol involved.
Well, it's hard to do when it's 90 degrees.
You're not doing it. No chance.
Yeah.
But I think this is all everyone's talking about.
All right, so the next question is, when does something that becomes a problem? And you know what? This is a very serious question for people who invest, which is virtually everybody who listens. All right, so here we are doing our podcast. I've been talking about it to nauseate people. Bill Cohan, he's got a New York Times. And I'll bet if we looked, there's sort of some other people, right? Bill Cohan and I aren't the only two people in the world that realize there's inflation, obviously. I'll bet, Maddie, if we did a Google search, there's 100 people that have run a column or talked about it on their podcasts or their shows in the last 6 months. When does, or you could talk about the stock market being in somewhat of a bubble. You're going to find all kinds of people that have mentioned that term or have said it. What has to happen? And boy, if I knew this answer to this question, I'd be a bazillionaire. What has to happen for one day that does become, I'll use a stupid new term, for that to go viral, to where everybody talks about it, to where the Bill Cohens and the Chiefs and you and the John Flanagans have been talking about for a while, sitting there go, wait a minute, now it's everybody's idea, not just what's the trigger for something like that? Why, when it's all of a sudden, well, that's all you'll hear about. Will it be a 1% CPI number, two in a row, three in a row? Somebody coming out and saying this is all BS, these idiots, these guys are absolute idiots? Or is it going to be a Tea Party moment, like the guy in Santelli convinced that he did? What triggers it?
Well, if a national news outlet or even a very visible political figure with nothing to gain by going out on a limb about it started talking about it as if it were a national crisis, I think you would start to see the floodgates open. But as it is now, it's really a lot of water cooler talk, which it wasn't, you know, 45 years ago. This is, you know, Ford and Nixon they're talking about this and wringing their hands constantly about it. You couldn't find anybody at the top who wasn't worried about it and communicating that worry all the time. But nobody at the top is worried at all about it now. You know, you don't hear anybody in Washington talking about inflation as a problem or anything that's you know, hurtful to anybody. But everybody else feels it, and it shows kind of how completely demoralized and, you know, disempowered everybody is below that. And you can get away with claiming there isn't any as long as the people in position to do something about it shut up about it. So I think it's going to take somebody who's got nothing really to lose or to gain and says, you know, as a matter of national policy, we are totally screwed unless we do something and hit the panic button. But you don't think that's going to happen, do you? I don't see it happening.
Well, when I was, let's say when I was younger, I would say, these guys are just screwing up, and they, you know, I was young and dumb like Milton Friedman. He was never dumb, but he was young and dumber. I think his feeling when he went around Washington and started preaching to these guys that you're doing, and this is essentially what happened in those days. The Federal Reserve allegedly had no idea that they were the cause of the inflation. And Milton Friedman would go to Washington, he'd come on the air, he'd write papers, and he was the guy, and I think he wrote a column someplace. I don't remember where the someplace was. He was the guy that essentially kept telling these guys that you are looking in the mirror, you're the cause of it. And he, in those days, I mean, because I, you know, listened to the guy whenever I could, and I had a class from him, he was always of the opinion, at least outwardly, that these guys had just been mistaken and had bad policy. It never crossed his mind that they were, quote, doing it on purpose, because they're series winners and losers, and they were favoring the winners. So, at age 22, when I was listening to him, I felt the same way. Now, after seeing all this stuff all these years, I don't feel the same way, John. I think it's on purpose. I think these guys know exactly who's winning and who's losing. And the amount of bonuses people are getting at the top when all these companies raise prices that can, and a lot of them can. I mean, Microsoft. I just got a thing a couple of weeks ago that the Microsoft Office and what's the other one they charge for you by the day? It's not all, but there's another thing that you got to pay them every month. They're going up 20 or 25%. Okay, so next year the guy's going to get a, you know, $300 million bonus instead of whatever he got this year. It's working for them. The combination of combinations, monopolies, duopolies, cartels, whatever you want to call them, the combination of that and price increases going up with nobody, and you lob that out there, well, we're not going to give loans to people that are younger at any kind of a decent price. We're not going to let anybody become the next Pfizer. We're not going to do anything like that. I mean, this is way more ominous than it ever was in the 70s, I think, John, potentially. And that's what has me so concerned. I mean, maybe the Fed back in those days just, quote, did a poor job. That's not what's happening this time. This is intentional. They know just what they're doing. I mean, Paul tried to turn the bus around. He went to the White House for one meeting, and he's totally changed policy. And I joke about it. Did they paddle him or did they waterboard him? But it's not a joke. I mean, they must have told him who's really in charge, and if you want your ass in there, this is what you're going to do. Because all of a sudden, he's a total changed man. This is being done on purpose, and if you told Biden tomorrow, that look what's happening, he doesn't care. Because the right guys are doing well with it, and it's scary. I mean, am I just getting too old and senile or what? Please talk me off this ledge.
No, and you know, in another world, somebody like Microsoft could never have gotten away with taking a product that they used to sell you that you owned, and you had a license to use it, and you could use it until the program stopped working, or you know, they made it stop working, which is kind of what Microsoft is famous for doing. They gum up their own product to make you buy the next version of it. But now you don't even own the product. And they could just up the price, and if everybody is tied into using it, what kind of leverage does anybody have? You have absolutely no leverage. And nobody at the top seems to think there's anything manipulative or unfair about this or anti-competitive. So there's no panic button around, I think, that could have been hit. And it's clear, like you said, that somebody knows what's going on, and somebody also knows that there's no value in talking about it, because that would... Who wants to hear about this stuff? We don't want it talked about. God help us if people actually started asking tough questions and we had to answer them. Because what would those answers sound like? We'd be pretty horrified by them.
Well, Jan, it's one thing to think that the listeners and my clients who essentially pay me to watch this crap and watch their money, okay, because they have, I'll use the term, real jobs. It's one thing for us to educate them. It's quite another to assume that the Federal Reserve doesn't know what we know. that'd be pretty scary, right? If you got the guys that reached that pinnacle of the economists in the world, even though I guess Paul isn't really an economist. Well, I guess I'm not either. I'm a PhD. It's hard to imagine that you and I know a lot more than they do. Like, they don't know who they're hurting and who they're helping. I can't go down that road. I mean, I can't believe that there's that kind of a gap. A senator or a representative has so much stuff on their plate, I think, that they sign bills that maybe they don't read and so forth. There's a lot of people winning and losing in that bill that if you brought it to their attention, they might actually care about, or maybe not. But those guys, I think, could be in the dark on a lot of this stuff. I don't think the Federal Reserve is in the dark on who they're helping and who they're hurting. And they must know that even though they've had interest rates down to, you know, next to zero for the people they care about, that for you and I, the credit card is actually higher than it was 12 years ago. They have to know that. If not, I mean, I refuse to believe that the limousine windows are that high up or that dark. I mean,
I think there's a very fine line, Tom, between incompetence and gross malfeasance. And you've got people now who are maybe they know more than you. They certainly probably know more than I do. But when it comes to knowing what really is happening because of this, they have schooled themselves in such a way that it doesn't bother them, and they don't really care about it, and they're negligent about it. So I think there is a strong element of incompetence behind all of this, and it's the people who do not ask the questions or rebel against it. And I have to blame that failure on either some kind of moral failing or sheer incompetence, that they're too beholden to somebody who's programmed them to do one thing, and it's not ever going to happen where they're going to look deeper into things and say, what have I done here? It's like, Colonel Nicholson in Bridge on the River Kwai, what have I done building this bridge? And then fall on the thing, blow the thing up finally. But I don't see anybody with that kind of bravery or nerve around in Washington. So,
well, I guess, I would love to know the answer to this question. I mean, and part of it, I'd like your opinion on this too. Let's put it this way. I don't even know how you define success in life, but I feel that I'm successful because I got a nice family and I got great clients and I'm doing what I want to do. Okay? I mean, I was playing softball to a ripe old age, and hopefully we'll be doing again pretty soon, which, I mean, other people younger than me are in the grave. So there's nothing to feel like. We have the best friends from Pullman too, and from Notre Dame, John. So life has been kind. I mean, it's not like it's been, a total box of roses, but it's been fine. And, there's way more people that didn't have as good a life as people who had a better one. Let's put it that way. Is it just that the people that we're talking about, I mean, even a senator, do they totally miss the talking to the Matty Webbers of the world, to the talking to the Thomases, to going to the Tripoli and talking to somebody who owns a restaurant and finding out what they're dealing with? Or is it, we're going somewhere else? Do you just get to the point where you can't have a conversation and learn from people, and that whole part of your stuff just backs out? I mean, if I'm a senator, do I not go to the Tripoli? Do I not go downstairs for a beer or the series and talk to people? What's going on the trading floor? And what about this trade? What about that trade? I mean, people feel that they can talk to me and you and Maddie. And the amount of information that I glean from listeners, from the stuff they send, and from the people on the show, I mean, maybe they don't get to talk to a Jan Flanagan or a Lou Michaels or a Jeff Joseph for an hour a week, which is really being schooled. I mean, maybe they don't get to do that, or they don't seek it out. Maybe they just don't know what's. I mean, I think it's one of these guys that's 90 years old, maybe exaggeration, Supreme Court judge. I think it's very possible that they could be in a cocoon, and maybe senators are too. Some of those guys. I mean, maybe they only run into the people that keep telling them what a great job they're doing because they're doing a good job for them. Maybe they don't get out of the limousine. I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think they have contempt for people like you and me.
What about Maddie?
They don't want to hear from us. They would never think of going into the Tripoli and having an honest conversation. Once the conversation got honest, they'd be out of there in New York second.
I bet they all have pedigree dogs. Don't even want to hang around Venkman, Maddie. What do you think? Venkman, does he feel small when he goes by a pedigree dog?
I don't think so. He's not scared of any dog.
So if somebody goes by with a grand champion, he doesn't care?
No.
The littlest dog has got the biggest ego.
That's right.
That is absolutely the truth. So what do you think, man? You think it's just, you think they lose touch?
I'm sure there's some of that, yeah. I think everyone is in their own bubble, whether it's the news channels you watch, whether it's the lifestyle you have, the neighborhood you live in. I think that's human nature.
Well, I one of the things that I've done a lot of reading, I was always fascinated by the man, but Franklin Roosevelt, and I was, well, John, I know you've read the Winds of War. I don't know if you ever read Maddie or watched the miniseries, but the book is terrific. The Roosevelt, maybe because he was in a wheelchair and really couldn't get out and do much, he would absolutely try and get as many people that wrote directly to him unfiltered as he could possibly find. And that was one of the ways he maintained his knowledge of what was going on. I'm going to guess Biden doesn't do that. And Trump, God, I don't think he had any intention of doing that. I mean, do you think that was Roosevelt's secret? I mean, maybe you don't need to do that today, but even the Obamas and the Clintons, they used to go out to a restaurant in Georgetown. What do? They clean the whole place out when those guys go, or what? Or I'm sure they don't sit down and talk to people, or maybe they do. I have no idea.
Well, it's why you could go. I think you could go into almost every house during the Depression and see Roosevelt's face on either a framed picture on the wall or on a calendar somewhere. And even if you're a Republican, it didn't really matter. There was the feeling of connection that you had with somebody who really knew something about how you were struggling and really cared about it and trusted you to do something that was, you know, the right thing to do in a tough situation. And I can't imagine anybody having that kind of confidence in a national leader now of either party, and not just at the very top, but all the way down. It's just these people have lost any kind of connection to the people that they represent, and that's just the way they want it, Tom. They don't want to be connected.
Well, I mean,
except via your you know, checking account, but other than that, no.
What would it take to have, I use the term, a regular citizen lobby? Every time Pfizer ran up and shoved money in the back of Durbin's pocket and said, this is what we want to do, for us to have a guy run up and shove money in the other pocket and say, well, that's not what we want to do. I think the access and I'm not so sure at the end of the day that they even know what we want them to do, because we're not there. These other guys are all over them.
Well, that's true, but, you know, they're not really interested in changing the tape either, so.
Well, that's true. John, thank you very much. SP Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures up 91. We'll come back with Mr. Mike Hart, talk all market.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello, Norfolk Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. Just Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures up 88, trying to bounce back from last week's kind of lousy week. It's surely a lousy Friday, but last week, every day, we seemed like we were up or looking like we were going to bounce in the morning, and we just leaked during the day, which we haven't seen in really quite a while. Maybe that will end today, or maybe we'll do the same thing today. I hope not. Dow futures up 193 over in Europe. We've got positive, real positive vibes in Europe. We've got the DAX up 163. That's a full percent. FTSE up 53.8%. CAC ran up 56.8%. Is everybody pretty much, well, they gotta be back by now. It's the third week in September, for God's sake. Asia, Nikkei up 65.2%, Shanghai up 12.3%, but we've got Hang Seng down 392. That's a percent and a half. These guys are very volatile in the last month. Soho China, whoever they are, dropped 35% on a failed deal. And they keep having this fight back and forth, the regulatory thing in Hong Kong and mainland China, but today the Hang Seng is suffering for it. As a way of review, Friday the Dow Jones up 271, S&P down 35, NASDAQ down 132, so pretty much of a bloodletting across the board on Friday. Bonds, down one, 10-year is down one basis point to 1.32, Bund unchanged minus 0.33, Japan unchanged positive 0.04. Oil, back up over 70 bucks, up 63 cents, that's almost a full percent at 70.35. Brent up 53 cents, 73.45. Natural gas up 15 cents, 5.09. RBOB up a penny, 2.17. I got some people last week that were bullish on oil, and I got them in a little bit of the XLE, which is the oil piece of the S&P. I think we're up a little bit in there. It hasn't been a big run up, but a little bit. Gold down 220, 17.89. Silver down 28 cents, 23.62. Copper down a penny, 4.43. It'll be interesting to see what happens to gold tomorrow on the CPI number. If that number comes in hot, if gold's going to move up at all, but maybe it won't. And this is sort of interesting. The crypto down another 1,100 bucks to 44,770. So the Bitcoin's down from over 50 to under 45 really in the last week. Things have been more volatile than it had lately, but anyway, to the downside this week. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still quiet on the accident front as far as the expressways are concerned, but traffic building heavily on the Edens and Kennedy, and same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Those four expressways seem to have the slowest travel times. We also have issues out on the tri-state, and then just traffic building normally on the south side. But no accidents to report. Only accident in the area is on the north side, northern suburbs here, Northwest Highway at North Nagel Avenue. There is a crash reported. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early, and then we'll see some sunshine later on and warm up to a high of 81. Right now it's overcast and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 109 today. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, Bears kicked off their season last night, losing big to the Rams, 34-14. It was a six-point game halfway through the third quarter, and then the Rams really poured it on, pulling away late and then running out the clock. Cardinals blew out the Titans in Week 1, winning 38-13. In baseball, White Sox get a walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth from Leury Garcia to top the Red Sox 2-1 and take 2 of 3 out of their weekend series. Cubs were swept at Wrigley by the Giants, losing 6-5 yesterday. Diamondbacks topped the Mariners 5-4. Chief.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, except I missed my mic fix last Monday with the holiday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks already.
Yeah, hey, real quick, I'll ask you guys, Southside term, top five universities here on, who the hell did this? I don't know, U.S. News and World. I'll give you a clue. I didn't go, or you didn't go, or Matt didn't go to any of them.
Are they all Ivy League?
Top five universities.
Yeah. Man, you can't ask that question. You're supposed to tell me.
Well, I would assume they're all Ivy League except for... There could be a Stanford or an MIT or a University of Chicago in there, but you said you didn't go to any of them, so you could
right.
You could strike University of Chicago.
Well, let's put it this way. If Fari was here, he'd be very happy.
So Princeton?
Number one.
Harvard?
Tied for second with Columbia.
Okay, so that's three.
By the way, in any guy's trip to New York, did you guys ever go by Columbia? It's in the Bronx, isn't it? No, it's not in Bronx. It's in Harlem.
Yeah, I did not go by Columbia. I went by NYU.
Yeah, I have too. It's in
Lower Manhattan.
Yeah, Lower Manhattan. That's an interesting place.
Yeah. So you said Columbia, Princeton, and Harvard. Yale's got to be right there.
Well, actually, they got three tied for second. MIT, Harvard, and Columbia. So that only leaves the fifth.
Oh, okay.
And Maddie, you got it. Yale would be fifth.
Yeah. It's always the same schools.
Yeah.
And then I assume. Stanford's up near there. Cornell's got to be near there. Brown.
No, they stopped at five.
Oh, okay.
Well, and you got to figure they're the most endowed schools in the country as well, so that probably helps.
Oh, lovey, lovey. He must be a Yale man, I could tell. Because Thurston Howell, of course, went to Harvard, as you well know. The Mike, what's going on here? We've got CPI numbers coming out tomorrow. Last week, the guys kept trying to buy the dip every morning and got spanked a little bit almost every day. But still, that's not going to stop the buy the dippers. Now we're buying the dip this morning.
I mean, you know, we're seeing the reversal this morning anyway, and we're seeing volatility come back down. It was over 20, which was interesting. You know, if we really get into the 20 range and start trading there, it's going to kind of change our trade a little bit. It's coming a lot faster. We're going to have to consider risk and how much risk we want to be taking, given the fact that there is more risk with more volatility. So, you know, it's something to consider. You know, typically you don't want to over-allocate during periods of time where risk is extremely high. And at the same time, you know, you can make the case that you don't want to over-allocate at any point because when you're talking about options, we, of course, know there's a margin associated with it that is subject to change given a move that is, you know, it could be one standard deviation, two standard deviations. There's no stopping where an underlying can move. So you always have to be prepared for the risk.
Well, that's the truth. And obviously when we've had this kind of a run-up for so long, I mean, I think it's especially depending on the people you're talking to. I mean, if they're 30 years old and they're putting, you know, $300 a week or $300 a month in their savings account, you don't have to really preach insurance all that much, you know. I mean, I guess no matter who you are, if the thing is going to drop 40%, which, you know, I'm not predicting or anything, you'd like to sell the day before that happens and you know, buy one and a half again as much when it's on the low. I mean, obviously that would be nice, but who the hell gets to do that? But the price of protection is not cheap. So you sit there and say, all right, I think the spiders are too high or whatever, and you try and go buy the puts. I mean, you're sitting there going, gee, these things are up there. But some of the stuff continues sort of to amaze, Mike, and we've had a couple of warm, we had one hot and one warm CPI number. The PPI number last week was the highest in what, 20 years or something? Or some bizarre number. And yet,
something like that,
since then, the bonds have rallied. I looked at the Fed. We've gone from, I mean, people don't even know what I'm talking about when I say this weekly numbers they don't have anymore. You know, the monthly number now doesn't come out till the 24th for the next month. When else have you seen in your lifetime that when a number gets unfavorable, the government just stopped giving it to you?
I mean, I don't know. It's a really strange time as far as the numbers and the correlation to the market. We're seeing less and less correlation. It's very difficult to not even predict, but to have greater insight once those numbers come out. I thought it was interesting you related the CPI number to gold. And that's another one that's confusing really the hell out of me is gold. You know, most of my trades have been short premium trades, so I've been trying to sell the relatively low volatility, which is not what I like to do. I like to sell higher volatility. There's not a lot of volatility in gold, but at the same time, it seems very sideways, subject to change, but we're not seeing any of the typical relationships hold up. We're not seeing it hold up in the bonds. We're not seeing it hold up in gold. It makes me somewhat nervous, and there's, you know, there's an actual index. I don't know if you've heard of it, Chief. Yeah, I'm sure you've probably heard of it, but most people probably haven't heard of this. It's called the SKEW Index, and you can just type in SKEW into the platform. It's not tradable, but it gives you an idea of where we stand on market perceived tail risk because it's based off of SPX options. And usually we fall between 100 being about average, 150 being very high, meaning there's a lot of uncertainty among players in the game that there's going to be some type of tail risk event. And I want to say last week we were at 163, which is pretty much off the charts for what we could find going back 15 years on this.
Well, I think the somewhat of the difference in what you see now versus maybe other times, you know, in our well, certainly in my lifetime back in the 70s, is once a problem was sort of identified, you know, once the inflation problem hit home, the Fed basically backed off, and interest rates rose up, and it was, you know, and everybody kind of knew we had this issue.
Right.
But this time, they're not backing off. And I think what you mentioned, and what I mentioned a lot, another guest, there doesn't seem to be this correlation between like a hot CPI number and a bond. I mean, to just drop back a little bit, your rate of interest ought to be the real rate of interest, whatever that is, you know, usually 2-3% through the centuries, plus the perceived inflation, because that's what you should demand if you lend somebody money for 10 years. I mean, it's only common sense, right?
Right.
I mean, I want the same value of money that I gave you plus an actual cost to use my money. I mean, this is not difficult, right? This is about the simplest. A second grader could know the formula, right?
Economics 101, right.
Yeah. Maybe not even that. Might be 51, you know, but now it's obviously not there. But now you sit here and say, okay, we've had two hot CPI numbers. The Fed should be getting worried, and because they're the ones that really caused the problem. And yet you look at the only thing you really can look at now is their balance sheet. And we went in the last 2 weeks, we've gone from 8332 to 8357. So we're $25 billion in the last 2 weeks. So they're saying, screw it. We'll take care of people's concerns that the bonds are going to go down because of this. We'll just print money and buy more. I mean, they're absolutely right. in over their heads, and they're not backing down, and don't seem to be backing down. I mean, if they need $10 trillion, that didn't happen in the 70s. Once they realized they had a problem, they said, "Whoa, we can't make it any worse." Now they don't seem to care. I mean, they're absolutely on board with. You know, if we get a 1% CPI number this week, instead of them cutting back on bond sales, they're going to do more to make sure it doesn't come out. And they got to be doing something with the gold. There has to be a liquidator someplace, whether it's another country or if it's China or something. Might be China, Mike, because they're in more trouble than people think, than most people think. And
that could be. Yeah, there is just something up with this gold market that I haven't seen before. You know, I did trade gold heavily for a few years in my life, but it hasn't been my major trade, but it's really becoming back. It's one of the first things I check in the morning now, because there is something going on there.
Well, I mean, copper is up, what, pushing 30-some percent in the last 2 years, right? And then the sake of the copper stocks, I mean, FCX traded, what, $5 last year, and it's 36.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
and yet
your gold miners are down. So now, obviously, gold is a precious metal; copper is more of an industrial metal. But the one right in the middle is silver, which is a little bit of both, and silver's not going anywhere either. So I mean, it's hard to imagine that this is happening without some sort of manipulation someplace. I mean, are we liquidating it? I don't know. There is somebody. But just, you know, you wonder if they're going to get away with it, Mike, and they'll get to hide it forever, and we'll just, you know, it'll turn the other way, and they'll be able to drag back slightly. But I don't even, at the prices everything is, houses. I mean, right now, boy, what is the amount of money that's going to be lost? I mean, if you're concerned, if you don't understand my concern about the market. Because they keep saying, you know, what are these guys, I mean, you were kind of with me on this. What are these two idiots concerned about? The stock goes from 50 to 100, it goes back to 50, so what? Well, I think the so what, Mike, is that on the way down, people lose a lot more money on the 50 down than they did on the 50 up because of the margin interest involved. And like, in the same way with houses, if a house goes from 250 to 350 and the last people that bought it, now, even if they put 20% down and they just borrowed 280 now on a house that was priced at 250 2 years ago. If that thing goes back to 250, you got a real problem. You got people's
absolutely.
And it's way worse than if it never went up there in the first place. Now, clearly, if you and I, or Maddie's are clever, clever creatures, and we bought it at 250, we sold it at 350, and we go live in a, you know, a motel with you put the quarters in and the bed vibrates place for 2 years, the market crashes, we go back and buy our house back at 250, obviously we're very clever ducks, right? We did this just right. And I think some people close to the action can do that on the big end, and maybe the, you know, on the huge end where you can sell shares and REITs and those kinds of things. But by and large, most people aren't going to do that, are they?
Right. No, they aren't. You're not looking at a liquid market where you can actually do that. I mean, the theory of it's excellent, but the reality is it's nearly impossible to execute because, you know, maybe we don't know where the real prices of real estate are until you get the sales, and you use the sales as sort of the figure of where we're existing right now. But I think there's a lot of fluctuation and a lot of wiggle room. And, you know, but there's no question it's going higher. Real estate's higher. There's a lot of things that are just higher. And, you know, going back to the concept of, you know, what is the Fed going to do? I think they've backed themselves into a corner where they really, I don't know how they can easily stop what they started. It seems to be a snowballing effect at this point.
Well, it's at some point, if you have a little campfire and it gets out of control and you got a 55-gallon drum of gasoline, you probably could put it out with the gasoline. Right, but you can't keep doing that to one of these days.
Technically, yes, you might be able to.
For like a little while, but yes. At some point, the thing's not going to be out all the way, and you better start running.
Yeah.
So what, in terms of the, are you noticing any, are the people who sold the huge November amount of VIX calls, I haven't been watching it. Have they been able, you think, to at least get their hedge out to November with a week to do it? They probably have, if they wanted to.
Most likely, if they needed to do it, and I believe the timing of it was like 2 weeks ago that we saw this trade go through. With volatility rising, they may have rolled out into November. But obviously, this is a huge play by whatever group or individual that is. If it's just a one-sided trade, it's very predictive of what they expect to see the outcome to be. And remember, no one, no matter how big they are, really knows what the outcome is going to be on how this turns out. It's one thing I've learned, at least, is the market has its own way of deciding where it's going to end up.
Oh, I don't know. What if you think somebody's close enough to people in government and they say your CPI numbers have been lagging reality for 12 years, and somebody said, "Well, we're gonna correct that in November." I think I'd want that trade.
I think so. Yeah, I think there still has to be some under the table, or whatever action going on here.
I don't think I've ever seen a trade that big on that high of a delta option. Usually, when people buy 30,000 of something, they're doing like a, you know, silver's trading 21.72. Somebody will buy like the next June 28s or something, you know. Or the next June 30s or something, they'll pay, 50 cents for something that should be worth 40 cents, and they'll buy a bazillion of them, and hope that now, between now and next June, people will forget about their trading, and they're wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice. But you don't usually have guys go in and buy, 50,000 of the 50 delta call, which would be at the money. You don't see guys going out and buying like the 21 and a half silvers and paying, 90,000 of those. I mean, that's a real trade.
No.
What the hell?
What's your real trade?
Go ahead. I was going to say, I was going to ask you on the various months that have VIX futures, how liquid and how often do they trade? I mean, if I put in an order today to buy, however many, let's say it's a 50 delta, is the future the same size as the VIX, or is it bigger? per point.
The futures, you know, the futures are bigger per point. The VIX trades sort of on dollars.
Well, yeah, it's one. So it's one. It's $100. Right. One option's $100 a point, right? For one option.
Yeah, and it's I haven't scalped VIX futures for about 3 years, but if I remember correctly, it was trading $25 a tick. There's an inside market, actually, not to get too technical here, but there's an inside market that the professionals can trade. Basically, there's 10 ticks within that, that point range where the, retail buyer can only play on the edges. So there's a lot more risk for the retail investor.
We're thinking, although we're going to check it out, that if you lose a point in the future, you lose $250, not $100. That'd be the same as the S&P.
That's right.
That's the same as the big S&P, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that I always was annoyed by is I didn't have access from a retail level. I wasn't trading professionally at this time. This was a few years ago. And from a retail level, there's actually 10 points being traded within that $250 spread.
If I could be SEC god for a day, the first thing I would do is stop professionals from trading within the retail market.
I agree.
You don't get to trade totally at 0.999 cents. Trade at the retail market and give the retail people priority at that price, like they used to be with the order book. Anyway, so if I were to be, you know, a big swing and whatever, could I put a hundred lot by November futures, sell September in there and get a decent fill? I mean, are they that liquid?
By November, sell September
future. I mean, if I was the people who took the other side of this trade,
yeah,
and all of a sudden I really
it's liquid enough. People would 100% give you that trade. I would say it's a trade that I would avoid no matter what. Only because I never ever want to get short of VIX spread, meaning the front month. The front month is going to decide if you're long or short the spread. So if you're short the front month, meaning September, and you're long the back month, November, then you're short the spread. And the difficulty with volatility is when volatility spikes big time, all of the risk is placed in the front month.
Right.
And very little risk gets placed in the back month. So the protection that you typically would have with short spread in something like VIX or anything in the futures market, you lose very quickly because the front month acts like its own wild beast and can spike dramatically without the back month catching up, and your protection isn't there.
Well,
if you wanted to do it, you could fill that in an instant.
Okay, because that's what I'm asking, is the guy who did the trade, I was checking the futures on that day, Mike, and he was not able to hedge with the Novembers. He had to buy a whole bunch of September and Octobers, and I'm wondering how much trouble he's had rolling his way out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting.
Because there was a huge spike in the futures in September and October. I mean, there's no way the guy... I mean, 90,000 options is the equivalent of 45,000 futures, but now you're saying the futures is bigger. If the futures were a dollar, that would be 45,000 futures, which is one hell of a lot. I mean, so even if it's 250,
that's a hell of a trade, and it's commanding. Options magnify risk and magnify returns. It's commanding a tremendous amount of potential return and a tremendous amount of potential risk. And when you're long an option, like a call option in VIX, you are going sort of against, you're fighting a harder battle to win. You need to really time the market correctly for that sell-off in order to get paid.
Boy, but if you did, it's huge.
Well, if you did it, you did it huge.
If you happen to catch it right,
you're good. You're good for a while.
You could buy us all a Chevy stick shift.
Exactly. You've made it, and it's like I mean, it's kind of like betting on the Yankees to win last night.
Oh, God. all right, Mike, we got a dash, buddy. Missed you last week. Enjoy it this week. I'll talk to you next week, if not sooner, bud. SP Futures up 29 now. NASDAQ Futures up 95. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.